Good evening, everybody, and nice to see so many participants this evening. So, as you all know, tonight's topic is halakhic considerations in adoption. We don't actually have a daf makorot this evening. We're not using a daf makorot, but we'll be making reference to certain passages. And by way of introduction, I want to say that halakhic issues to do with adoption are really very much contemporary, and that the situation has changed a lot over the course of the past 50 years or so. One of the key works I'm going to be referring to this evening is a sefer called Likutei Meir, which was written by Dayan Meir Steinberg of the London Beit Din in the late 1960s. That this was he started work on this. He was regarded as a world expert in the halachot of adoption. Prior to that, adoption hadn't really been much of a live issue, meaning that, you know, back in Europe in the day, that maybe sometimes, you know, people would look after other people's children, that perhaps a couple would die young and there'd be a child left who needs to be looked after by a relative, and they would take him in, but it, you know, wouldn't necessarily be a formal adoption relationship that they had. And certainly the notion of people, you know, joining an adoption society and adopting a child from other parents was something that didn't particularly happen. Adoption was something that happened on an as needs basis. So there would either be children who were orphaned, or children whose parents couldn't look after them for whatever reason or another. So, you know, they were taken in by other people, sometimes people with children of their own, sometimes by people without children. But the notion of adoption, you know, in a modern sense, you know, certainly wasn't known 100 years ago in the Jewish communities of Europe. That's observation number one. Observation number two is when Likutei Meir was written by Dayan Steinberg, most adoptions were what we would call closed adoptions. And that means that the adopting parents didn't know anything about the origins of the child that they were adopting. And the biological parents didn't know who was adopting their child. And the child who was being adopted very often didn't know at all that they were adopted. And even if they did know that they were adopted, they didn't know anything about their origin. So it was all kept very secretive. That change, and you know, you do find now that there are people in late middle age or early old age who were adopted as children. Sometimes they've just found out in middle age that they were adopted, or even if that they found out a long time back, they had no way of finding out anything about their biological parents. And now they're trying to trace biological family when, of course, their parents are likely to have passed on. And certainly, you know, 50 years ago, the records that were kept very often didn't have much of the information. So that was the situation 50 years ago. Nowadays, it's quite different. In general, Adoptions are much more open. The notion of not telling a child that they're adopted tends to be something from the past. Nowadays, we tend to tell children that they are adopted and try to give them as much information about their biological family as possible, whilst, you know, obviously, you know, getting that balance between making them feel secure in their adoptive family, making them feel loved, making sure they don't feel rejected by their birth parents. And of course, the you know, emotions and psychological issues can be very very profound in cases of adoption as well. So nowadays, there's a lot more knowledge about the biological origins of a child, and we're going to see how that's important. Having said that, a change which has happened, and perhaps to some degree the pendulum swung back again, a change which has happened in the course of the past, I suppose, 20 years, is that there's a lot of adoption from Russia, from Eastern Europe, from South America, and such places, where perhaps the information about the birth parents is much more scanty, and we don't know so much about them, even though in many of those cases a certain amount of assumptions will be able to be made, and we'll talk about that in due course. Another issue just to sort of flag up is that the number of children up for adoption, certainly domestically, is a very small proportion of what it was 50 years ago. 50 years ago, it was still regarded as being a matter of shame if a woman or girl had a baby out of wedlock, and very often in those cases the child would be put up for adoption. That's many cases, you know, a teenage girl would, as they said, get herself in the family way, or get herself into trouble. Very often they'd be sent away to an aunt somewhere, you know, in the country, and that wasn't necessarily a real aunt, but it was to a boarding school for pregnant mothers. And within 48 hours of giving birth, the baby would be taken away from them, and they'd be told, you know, it's for everybody's best interest that should happen. And that would be it. That would be the last they know of their child. Nowadays, certainly in this country, that rarely happens like that. The social stigma associated with bearing a child out of wedlock or being born out of wedlock is barely exists, I think, in secular society. And as a result, there are very few children available for domestic adoption. You know, most adoptions take place from children who come from abroad, and all this has got relevance to the halakhic discussion. It should also be noted that I think, in a classical sense, that, you know, historically, adoption in the Jewish community was, you know, for the needs, you know, particularly for the needs of the child, as opposed to the needs of the parent, meaning that a child, you know, parents died or parents couldn't look after the child, so the child would be taken in, or it was a foundling, the child would be taken in and looked after. In modern times, there's a notion of parents, couples who are unable for whatever reason to have children of their own, that biologically of their own, so they want to adopt adopt children who are in need of a home, and that they will thereby fulfill the needs of parenthood with those children. So all that background, I think, is somewhat relevant to the halakhic discussion we're going to be having this evening. Now, the notion of formal adoption doesn't exist in the halakha. It's really not discussed till the last 100 years at best. Having said that, there is evidence, certainly going back to Chumash and Tanakh, of what we would call essentially being adoption. I suppose the best example of adoption is Moshe Rabbeinu being adopted by the daughter of Paro, where the pasuk says Vativyehu levat Paro vayhi la levein, that Moshe's mother brought Moshe to the daughter of Paro, vayhi la levein, and he was a son for her. And the pasuk in Devarim says, "Ve'ela b'nei Bitya bat Paro." These are the children of Bitya bat Paro, and one of them is Yered. And according to Chazal, that is Moshe. So Moshe is identified as being a child of the daughter of Paro. And in Sefer Shmuel, we talk about the Chameshet b'nei Michal bat Shaul, the five children of Michal bat Shaul. But the Gemara says these weren't Michal's children, they were Meirav's children. But seeing as Michal brought them up, even though they were her nieces and nephews, nevertheless, they're called after her. So we see there that those and various other examples of, if you like, adoption in practice, and even sort of recognized as adoption, but not perhaps not formally formally called adoption. So I want to discuss a number of points in this context, and if as we go through anybody's got any questions, wants to put them in the chat, then be very very happy to try and respond to them. So let's start off with the question: is there any Jewish value to the notion of adoption? You know, do we regard it as being meritorious from a Jewish perspective? And a number of people who discuss the concept of adoption, as I say, there's Dian Steinberg's Sefer Likutei Meir, Rav Melech Schachter wrote an article that was published, again, probably about 50 years ago, in the Journal for Halakha and Contemporary Society. Rav Moshe Feinstein's addressed it in Shuvot, etc., etc. They reference a Gemara in Masechet Sanhedrin, Daf Yud Tet Amud Bet, which says, "Shekol hamagadel yatom betoch beito," anybody who raises an orphan in their home, "ma'ale alav hakatuv ki'ilu yaldo," then the Torah regards this person as if they've actually fathered the child or parented the child, that they've given birth to them, whether it's a father or a mother. So we see that there's a lot of significance, a lot of respect accorded to a person who brings a needy child into their home. Of course, that will be very different. That'll be very different between a yatom, or a child who's born into poverty where parents can't look after the child, to a case where children are almost produced on order for purposes of adoption. And that would be perhaps a different different case. But certainly the notion of, in a classical sense, taking a child that is homeless and bringing them into your home is highly regarded. It's ki'ilu yaldo, it's as if you have given birth to this child. There is discussion even amongst the Achronim as to whether or not by adopting a child you can be regarded as having fulfilled the mitzvah of Peru Ravu, of procreating. Now, on the face of it, we would presume not, in terms of it might be very noteworthy and it might be very worthy for them to do this, but nevertheless they haven't actually fulfilled the mitzvah of having children themselves. Nevertheless, there are some achronim. Rav Shlomo Kluger was of the opinion that in actual fact you have fulfilled the mitzvah, even of prur avu, by rearing and bringing up somebody else's child in your home. And they say that was also the view of Rav Soloveitchik. That's not normative halachic psak. But it's certainly interesting to have such a view on the table. Now, I said that there's been a big shift in attitudes towards adoption over the course of the past, say, two generations. 50 years ago, there was a notion that, adopt children, bring them up as your own, don't let them know that they're biological parents are other people. It will be too traumatic for them, and keep them in the dark throughout their entire lives. Nowadays, that approach has shifted, and that's probably for good from a number of perspectives. Number one, the notion of finding out in middle age that the people you thought were your biological parents aren't your biological parents, and having that big gap and realizing that your whole life has been a life of falsehood, it must be a very traumatic experience to have to go through. And that it, must be psychologically much healthier to know the truth from the beginning. Obviously, it's got to be dealt with sensitively. You don't chas v'chalila, tell a child, well, you were abandoned, and we took you in because your birth parents didn't care about you. But you explain, that. Your birth parents loved you very much, but they weren't able to look after you. And they hoped that somebody, caring would be able to look after you. And we know that you're not your birth parents. And, it's the type of thing that, nowadays, adopting parents are encouraged to talk to their adoptive children about. From a halachic perspective, I think we can say that it's very, very important indeed to be able that there should be awareness of this. It's for a number of reasons. Number one will be in terms of potential marriage partners. We know that there are halachot to do with who you can marry and who you can't marry. You can't marry a close relative. Now, if a person grows up believing that they are Mr. and Mrs. Goldberg's biological child, and they can marry anybody who's not related to Mr. and Mrs. Goldberg, then it could happen that they'll end up marrying somebody who's a biological relative of theirs. Whereas if it's flagged up to them from the outset that in actual fact they are adopted, then even if they don't know who their biological relatives are, nevertheless, it's something that will be able to be factored into any equations when it comes to getting married. So that's one consideration. And another consideration is with regard to the halachic relationship that they have with their adoptive parents or adopting parents. And that'll be in a number of regards. So one implication would be, say, in terms of Yerusha, in terms of inheritance. Now, we know that there's the Torah rules for inheritance, and the Torah rules in inheritance that it goes through the family line. So if a person dies without any children, so then their estate is inherited by their siblings, if they've got siblings, or by their nieces and nephews. And those siblings or nieces and nephews have a halachic entitlement to the estate. Now, if a person's got adoptive children and they don't know that it's not ever spoken about that these children are adoptive, so then they will presume on the parents' death, and everybody will presume on the parents' death, that they are entitled to inherit the estate, when from a halachic perspective, that's not actually correct. Now, of course, things can be done to adjust this. Halachic wills can be made halachic wills can be made to make sure that they will, the estate goes to whoever you want it to go to, etc., etc. But it can't be taken as a matter for granted. So that would be one area where it's important to be aware of adoptive status. Another very important and perhaps much more sensitive issue is to do with the halachot of yichud and the halachot of chibuk v'nishuk. Generally speaking, you're not allowed to be in yichud, you're not allowed to be secluded with a person of the opposite sex unless they're a close relative. So if parents have adopted a child, they're not biologically related to that child, are they allowed to be in yichud together? Are they allowed to kiss and hug that child? So this is a point of machloket amongst the poskim. A number of halachic decisors, and this is the majority opinion, is that the prohibitions of yichud and the prohibitions of chibuk v'nishuk do actually apply to adopted children. And this, of course, is a very difficult area to deal with. It has to be dealt with very sensitively. The Tzitz Eliezer Rav Voldenberg was a little bit more lenient on this, and Rav Soloveitchik is also reported as being lenient in this regard. They were of the opinion that there's a certain amount of subjectivity involved in these laws as well. And if a person, why is it that there's no prohibition of yichud between a father and his daughter? Because the nature of their relationship is such that it's a parent-child relationship rather than anything with any sexual overtones or undertones. And there are those who suggest, this was the reported approach of Rav Soloveitchik and the Tzitz Eliezer, that when you've adopted a child as a baby, so again, the relationship the emotional relationship is of parent-child rather than anything else, and therefore there's not a prohibition of yichud or chibuk v'nishuk, but that's not a general position. So it's important, to be aware of that, as well. Now, big questions come up, depending on whether the adoptive child is Jewish or not Jewish. Let's start by talking about if the child is Jewish, and then we'll go on to discuss if the child was non-Jewish. And we'll find that in actual fact, in both instances, there are issues that make it easier to deal with, and issues that make it harder to deal with. And leniencies, if you like, and stringencies in both cases. Let's assume that adoptive parents are adopting a Jewish child. Now, there can be a number of questions which will come up, and they will depend on a number of factors. Is it an open adoption or is it a closed adoption? And if it's open, how much knowledge is known? And if it's closed, how much knowledge is known? So in the simplest case, it will be that Jewish parents are adopting a Jewish child and everybody knows who the biological parents are. It could be a tragic case where the biological parents The biological father died before birth, and the biological mother died in birth or after birth, and there's no question about the yichus, about the familial identity of the child. And then the just as questions are sort of what responsibilities do the adoptive parents have, and to a certain degree, what rights do they have? So, for example, let's say parents adopt a child within days of birth. Right? Do they have an, if it's a boy, do they have an obligation of taking care of the Brit Milah? If they are taking care of the Brit Milah, who says the brachot that the father would normally say? Usually the brachot are recited by the father. What would be the case in this instance where the biological father, the person who biologically has the halachically has the chiyuv of doing Brit Milah, who's going to say the brachot when he's absent? So this is a point discussed in the poskim. They say that the adopting father can say the brachot. Ideally, he should be the sandek as well, because generally speaking, we say if the father's not present, then the sandek says the brachot. In this case, there's an adoptive father present, so maybe it should be the sandek, maybe it should be him. The recommendation is he should, fulfil the role of the sandek, which I think is a particularly nice thing for him to do as well, because the sandek's legs are compared to the mizbeach, and adopting parents are making a big sacrifice and are being like a mizbeach for this child. What about pidyon haben? Similar question comes up. If the child is a firstborn boy and needs pidyon haben, are the adopting parents responsible for it? And is a bracha recited? Dianne Steinberg's recommendation is that they should do the pidyon haben. Bracha shouldn't be recited. And then when the child reaches adulthood, they should do pidyon haben again themselves. And again, not reciting brachot. That's if the parentage is known. Sometimes the parentage isn't known. So it might be that the mother is known, but Jewish mother is giving up her child for adoption. In that case, there's no question about the Jewish identity of the child, but other questions about the yichus will come up. The first question will be, can we be certain that the child's not a mamzer? We don't know who the father is. Maybe, this is a single woman who's giving up a child for adoption, and she's not saying who the father is. Now, that could be for a number of reasons. It might be that she doesn't know who the father is, that she'd had a promiscuous lifestyle and been intimate with a number of men around about the same time, and she's just got no idea who the father is. It could be that she knows who the father is, but for various reasons, she's protecting his identity. So the Jewish identity of the child is not open to question, even if the father was not Jewish. So then the child is still going to be Jewish. But what if the father was Jewish? Do we need to be concerned that perhaps the father was a relative of hers? Perhaps this was a child conceived in incest, and that's why she's not identifying who it was. That could be one of the questions that come up. What if this, do we need to be concerned that perhaps the child is the child of a Kohen or a Levi? That's going to have implications. If we need to be worried that perhaps the father is a Kohen, then the child is going to be a Kohen, with implications about who that child can marry. What if, and this is a point discussed by quite a number of halachic decisors, what if the parents, what if the mother says she knows who the father is, and he's not a relative of hers, and he's not a Kohen? She says that, but she doesn't want to identify who he is. For various reasons, she doesn't want to identify who he is. But she gives that as Eidut in Beit Din. Is she believed or is she not believed? These are all points which are discussed. I'm not going to give any of the answers now, and they're well beyond the purview of your local Orthodox rabbi, but these are the questions that that come up and are sometimes discussed with the local Orthodox rabbi. What if, and this is a case that can certainly happen in Israel, what about an abandoned child? You know, unfortunately, every now and then we read in the news about, you know, an abandoned child, a newborn baby is found on a doorstep somewhere or outside a hospital or in at a bus stop. And nobody knows who the parents are. What's the halachic status of that child? And that'll be different in Chutz La'aretz to in Israel. In Israel, most people are Jewish, so an assumption can be made that the child is a Jewish child. In Chutz La'aretz, that's not going to be the case. But what if it's it might depend on where the baby is found. What if the baby is found outside a rabbi's house in Stamford Hill? Might be different to, if it's found outside a mosque in Bradford. So those are issues to consider. But the identity of the child is going to be important. But if the mother is Jewish, and of course the child is Jewish, and if the father is not known, then it's going to make it much more complex in terms of prohibitions about getting married, because we know who the mother's relatives are, but we don't know who the father's relatives are. And that's going to make life a little bit more complex. If the child being adopted is of non-Jewish parentage, then in certain senses it makes life much easier. Because a non-Jewish child is not related Jewishly, is not related halachically to anybody Jewish. So there are going to be far fewer restrictions on marriage, except for one very big restriction, and that, of course, is that the child's not Jewish. So a non-Jewish child who's adopted by Jewish parents is going to need to be converted. Now, this is a big halachic issue as well. Generally speaking, we say that conversion is a matter of choosing to be Jewish. And a person, there are key aspects to conversion. The three key aspects of conversion are mila and tevila, that brit mila, circumcision for a male, tevila, immersion in a mikveh for everybody, and kabbalat or mitzvot, accepting upon yourself the yoke of the mitzvot. Now, this is the big question. So I understand that an adult is able to make a conscious decision that they want to accept upon themselves the mitzvot. But a child, very often, parents will adopt a child that's a baby, or even not a baby, a minor is not able to make an informed decision about whether or not they want to become Jewish. If a parent adopts a child, how could the parents just say, well, you know, we're going to accept, we're deciding this child is going to accept mitzvot, and this way the child can become Jewish? Can't be done like that. However, there's a Gemara in the first parak of Masechet Ketubot, which is very important. It's the Gemara on Daf Yud Aleph Amud Bet, which talks about Ger Katan, a child who becomes Jewish. And the Gemara says, Matvilin Otoal Dart Beit Din, that with the consent of Beit Din, the child can be immersed in the mikveh, and if it's a boy, haprit milab dan, and then becomes Jewish. Now, how can that be done if the child's not able to make an informed decision? The answer is, the Gemara says, we've got a principle, zachin la'adam shelo b'fanav, something which is to a person's advantage, we can do for them, even without their consent. And it's generally regarded as being to a person's advantage that they should become Jewish. Being Jewish is a big privilege and opens up a world of oysters to you. But I suppose it closes certain oysters to you as well, the tray for oysters. But it presents you with a load of mitzvah opportunities and ultimately with the ability to become tachat kanfei hashchinah, to become close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So this is a zechut to the to a child. And therefore we say that in the presence of Beit Din, parents, adoptive parents, or in actual fact the Gemara talks even about non-Jewish parents being able to bring their child to the Beit Din and having the child converted. But we're not talking about that situation. We're talking about a scenario where adopting Jewish parents will bring their non-Jewish adoptive baby to the Beit Din to be immersed in the mikveh and to become Jewish. Now that's all well and good, except for one thing, and this is an area of halakha which is discussed by the contemporary poskim. What degree of observance is needed by the adopting parents? Meaning, generally speaking, we'll say that if a person's comes to Beit Din, a Gentile person comes to Beit Din and wants to convert, if they say, well, I want to convert, I want to become Jewish, but I'm not interested in observing the mitzvot, then we say to them that Judaism's not for you, and we don't accept them as a convert. And even if they say, I'm accepting all of the mitzvot except for one mitzvah, we also won't accept them as a convert. So they've got to accept all of the mitzvot. Now, in our case, it's not the adopting parents who are accepting the mitzvot. It's the Beit Din on behalf of the child. But the big question is, what if this child is going to be raised in a non-observant home? So then that child is going to become Jewish and transgress all the mitzvot of the Torah. Could be that the adopting parents don't keep Shabbat, don't keep kosher, don't do tefillah, etc., etc. And therefore the child's going to be brought up without any knowledge of mitzvot. You can't call it a zechut, you can't call it advantageous to them to be a Jew who doesn't keep mitzvot. Being a Jew who doesn't keep mitzvot, you're worse off than being a Gentile that doesn't keep mitzvot. So this is a big issue, and this is one of the issues which really causes a lot of adopting parents a lot of angst. Meaning that I've seen this, on a number of occasions during my career as a rabbi, that there are parents who have gone through many years of difficulty trying to conceive and trying to have children, and that in itself is very difficult, journey to go down that can last for a number of years, and finally they've reached the conclusion they're not going to be able to have biological children. They want to go down the route of adoption. That in itself is a long and difficult process, which is not a pleasant thing to have to endure. Finally, they've got a child. They come to Beit Din, and they're proud Jewish parents. They're proud Jewish parents. They like going to shul from time to time, and they like keeping the chagim, but they're not observant. They're not religiously observant. So the child's going to be brought up in a non-religious environment. Is that acceptable or not? So many poskim say no, and it's not a valid conversion because the whole premise of Zachin doesn't apply. It's not advantageous for the child to be brought up in this environment. Other poskim say, no, listen, it's a valid conversion because Beit Din have done it. It's just, it's not a really good position for the child to be in, but if it's done, it can be done. Others, some Batei Din take a more flexible approach, meaning that they're a lot more relaxed than when an adult comes to convert. And if an adult comes to convert and says, yes, listen, I'm interested in keeping all the mitzvot, but, I really, mincha and ma'ariv, I can't do mincha and ma'ariv. It's mincha in the winter. I've only got a 3-hour window there. I'll do everything except daven mincha. That wouldn't be acceptable to the Beit Din. If parents of adopting parents came with a non-Jewish child to Beit Din, and say yes, and we're willing to become much more Shabbat. Yes, we can keep Shabbat. Yeah, we can take off Friday afternoons in the winter. It's not a problem. Now, mincha, I can't do mincha in the winter. I think they would still be accepted that the child could be converted, because essentially the child's going to be brought up, you know, in an environment where they're going to be empowered to do mitzvot. So that's a big issue. Somebody raised the question in the chat: what if the baby has already had a circumcision as a non-Jewish child and is then subsequently adopted and converted? Yeah, then there would be a need for a hatafat dam brit, for just a little bit of blood to be drawn from the site of the site of the milah, and that's what would be done. Related questions that come up are with regard to the name of a child that's adopted. Parents have adopted a child, and they obviously, you know, want, you know, as much as possible for this child to be regarded as their child. They understand it's not their biological child, and they're not trying to hide any realities from the child. The child knows that it's not biologically the parents are other people, but the adoptive parents and the emotional parents are the ones that this child regards as their parents. Well, many years ago, when I was wet behind the ears, I think I was a teenager, whatever, I said to somebody who was adopted, I said something about their real parents. And quite rightly, they put me in my place. They said, no, these are my real parents. I've also got biological parents, which, you know, is a wonderful relationship for an adoptive child to have with their adoptive parents. And they wouldn't think of using another surname than the surname of their adoptive parents. They're Goldberg, not Christensen. You know, and they'll always want to be known as Goldberg. Question is, what will their Hebrew name be? Will their Hebrew name be Chaim ben Yaakov, Yaakov being the name of the adoptive father? Or will it be Chaim ben Shlomo, if their birth parents were Jewish and their father was Shlomo? Would it be Chaim ben Avraham, if they're a converted child? So these are issues which come up, and there's a machloket amongst the poskim. Some poskim say you can only use the birth parents' names, because that's the reality. That's the halachic names in terms of physical reality. Whereas others say, in actual fact, halachic names are how you are known. And if you're known as being the child of so-and-so, so then that serves as a name, and that serves to identify you. But a further consideration is that if, let's take the case where your birth parents are Jewish, so your name is Chaim ben, your birth name would be Chaim ben Yaakov, and your adoptive name would be Chaim ben Moshe. Right? So if you use the name Chaim ben Moshe, then you can marry anybody whose father's name is Yaakov, because they're not your sibling. So that would be an issue, because your Hebrew name is used to identify you in terms of who you can get married to and who you can't get married to. So a general rule of thumb is, but it didn't usually like to say that you should use the name Chaim ben Moshe, Moshe being the adoptive parent, the adoptive father, and you'll write down Hamagadlo, who raised him. So it's like, you know, saying that's Chaim ben Yaakov, Hamagadlo, who raised him. Just, you know, flagging up the fact that this isn't a biological relationship, but it's a... It's another relationship, and that will deal with the questions, you know, if one of them's a Kohen, one of them's not a Kohen. It'll flag up things in terms of who they can marry, and particularly flag up things with regard to Gittin, because for Gittin we're very, very strict about the names. Less strict for names about being called up to the Torah and being writing on a ketubah, meaning that if those that, you know, if you get an aliyah and they call you up as Chaim ben Moshe when your name should be Chaim ben Yaakov, you can still say the brachot on the Torah. You know, it doesn't invalidate your aliyah la Torah. If a get is written with the wrong name, then it can have very very serious implications. A final point, just to flag up, is the question of can a this is again a point of machloket in discussion, but can an adopted child marry adopted siblings? That's a child who's adopted by Mr. and Mrs. Goldberg, and they have biological children of their own. Can the adopted child marry his adoptive siblings? So that's a point of discussion in the poskim. Obviously, from the narrowest halachic perspective, it would be permissible. But from other halachic perspectives, it wouldn't be, because particularly because it would be perceived as being that the child, you know, that these are siblings who are marrying each other. So really what I've tried to do this evening is give an overview of some of the issues that are encountered in adoption. Adoption is a very, very sensitive topic. I might have touched some raw nerves here this evening. If I have, and anybody's been hurt by it, or anybody's been affected by it, then, you know, very happy to discuss it with you, you know, offline, if I can be of support to anybody. But it's certainly something which the halakha admires. People who do this and adopt children, they're regarded as being very noble people, and you know the halakha tries to give every support which is possible. So those are the key issues. It's the type of area where we say, you know, don't try this on your own. Meaning that, you know, the halachic implications are very, very significant, of course, and should always, you know, it's usually, you know, beyond the capabilities, as I said, of the local Orthodox rabbi. But very often the local Orthodox rabbi will be the first port of call for a couple who are, you know, dealing with adoption issues. And, you know, hopefully we'll be able to at least flag up what some of the issues that are going to have to deal with will be. So thank you, everybody, for joining us this evening.